to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Can everybody hear me? Everybody hear me all right? Yep. Okay. Test, 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 test. Everybody still hear me?
I can hear you. That's all that matters. Let's go.
All right. Roll call. We have everybody here tonight. And next on the agenda is citizen input. If you would like to address the council, please raise your hand. We'll allow you up to 5 minutes. You can come to the podium and give us your name and address. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Bruce Lopez, and I'm just a concerned citizen. One of the things that's happening here in Othello is that they're closing the employment office, and they have tried that before, and we called the mayor, and he told me to talk to the administrator. I think that happened last year. And so they called the people that were needed to be called, and they kept it open. Now, again, they're saying that there's not enough people going in there, and there is. They're only open one day a week, but they want to just close it completely. So this is the reason that I'm here, is I'm hoping, I have some phone numbers that hopefully the mayor or somebody might be able to call and make sure it's kept open. They're always saying that there's not enough people, but there is. There's a lot of people going on there. The times that they're open, because sometimes the person that's working there, they pulled her away and sent her to Moss Lake, or sometimes she calls him because she's sick. But people are always coming in, so I'm just concerned.
Okay, could you call City Hall in the morning? Oh, okay. Why don't you go ahead and hand that to Mike right there, and she'll give it over to Debbie. You want to give that to Debbie, Mike? And in the morning, we'll take a look at what we can do. Maybe.
Thank you very much. Okay. Appreciate it.
Thank you for coming in. Anybody else? Okay, then I'll close the citizen input time. Do I hear a motion for the approval of the agenda?
So moved.
Charles second. First and second. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed the same? Okay, that passes. Do I hear a motion for the consent agenda?
Make that motion.
Second.
Mark Snyder first and Ken Johnson was second, I believe. Any discussion on that one? Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed the same? All right, and that passes as is. Okay, current business. Adams County Development Council presentation. Grace Shelby.
I have some handouts here. The last page is all the
board. I'm going to get to the microphone first so everybody can hear.
The last page is all the board members' contact information, and we welcome any input or thoughts that you might have on economic development at any time. And so we invite you to get in contact with any of our board. The first page is our future activities regarding the city of Othello and Adams County. We will continue to be proactive in providing tools for businesses in the Othello area and Adams County to see expansion. Our efforts to recruit businesses to Othello area and Adams County will continue and remains one of our focal points. We will continue to promote the completion of the wind farm site southwest of Othello. We will continue to promote Othello's agricultural committee as a value-added food processing and business center. We will continue working with Grant County Economic Development Council as a regional partnership. Just in the past few months, we've really established really a good close bond with them, and I talk to them at least once a week, and they are really willing to step in and help us with whatever we need. So I think that's been a big plus for us because we haven't had that in the past. Adams County Development Council has an ongoing relationship with SkillSource and Workforce Development to provide training for employees that will benefit local businesses. We will continue to work with the Prosperity Center in providing services for businesses and personal use. We will create seminars and training to aid the local businesses and the new businesses in Othello area and Adams County. We have plans to develop another job fair for Othello businesses and provide future trained labor for the local food processing plants. We will provide tools for and assist for export businesses in Othello and Adams County. We will continue to contact Othello and Adams County businesses to determine business needs. Our hosted stakeholders annual luncheon will continue, and it is to thank our county supporters and is usually held each February. We will increase participation in events that promote Othello, such as the Sandhill Crane Festival, the Cooley Corridor. We will continue to have a display booth at the Sandhill Crane Festival and the Adams County Fair. We continue to seek ways to provide more information on grants that would be beneficial for Othello and Adams County. We are striving to develop an increased working relationship with the Columbia Basin Railroad. We've had some positive contacts with them, and that's looking really positive. We will continue economic development programs with the Department of Commerce. We continue to promote the elements of the Washington State Economic Development Commission. We will continue to advertise in national site selector publications like eSolutions, BJX, GCX, and the Spokane Business Journal to attract new businesses. We will continue to be a member of the Inland Northwest Partners. That's a regional economic development group, and they're more concerned about our region than the Washington State Economic Group, which tends to have a lot of focus on the west side. So we have decided to partner with them because we feel like they understand a lot more of the needs of this area. We will continue to be a member of the Association of Washington Business. This group supports Washington businesses and is an active voice at the state level. We will continue to operate Othello Radio WPEA 526, and we will continue to work with WSU and the Allen Foundation on the Unbanked program. The Unbanked program is a program they're looking into for banking needs of the population that doesn't have a bank access. It's just in the beginning stages, and we don't really know where it's going yet, but we're looking into it and see what they're planning to do at WSU with that. Our past activities, we recently provided assistance with the Department of Commerce grant for the Beautification Committee, and I need to say thank you to Eamon because he really helped me a lot with writing that and directing it and telling me what to say where, because I wasn't always really sure. We'll know later this month if they're going to be awarded that grant or not. ACDC funded two webinars this spring on economic development and marketing. We assisted at the Big Bend Community College Spring Job Fair. We promoted an assisted business seminar for new and current businesses. We provided assistance in the recruitment of new businesses to Othello area for the two food plants. We provided a free luncheon for stakeholders in the Othello area with information on how the ADO operates. We have partnered with Grant County Economic Development Council on projects. ACDC assisted the Cooley Corridor providing tourist information. We assisted with the Sandhill Crane Festival. We provided a manned display booth with city and regional tourist information at both the Sandhill Crane Festival and the Adams County Fair, and we will be at the Adams County Fair this week too, provided I can make it. We manned an ACDC display booth promoting Othello and Adams County. We sent a representative to visit the Harvesting Clean Energy Conference down in Boise, Idaho. This trip also created an opportunity for business recruitment and relocation. Several groups have indicated an interest in the Othello area from that one conference that we went to. We promoted Othello and Adams County at the national level with ad in National Site Selector magazines, eSolutions Business Expansion Journal, and Global Corporate Expansion. We have worked with the Prosperity City to promote business operations. We are a member of the Inland Northwest Partners. We operate the radio. We have worked with several small businesses and with the Small Business Administration. We provided assistance to the proposed wind farm on Saddle Mountain, southwest of Othello, and we provided information and data on Othello when requested by potential businesses or people looking to relocate to Othello. We are members of the Association of the Washington Business. And again, our last page is the board. And Ken just told me that today on, what is it, September 25th?
September 24th.
Fourth,
I believe.
We will have another webinar.
Webinar hosted by Roger Brooks on promoting your city on a minuscule budget, very small budget. So it's a good start for us. And it's open to all the public. We've opened them up to other communities of the county, the webinars, and we've had a pretty good response.
Council, any questions for Grace? Well, I think you guys are doing a great work. The meetings I've been at and stuff, I'm impressed. They're working hard to really promote Adams County as a whole. You know, it's pretty exciting to see things happening after all this we just heard about. So, any other questions or from council? Okay, thank you, Grace.
Thank you.
But you can stay right up there. 4.2, consideration of Adams County Development Council contract.
I could probably, I'll address this. If a lot of the council members don't know, I am the current president, sitting president for the Adams County Development Council. This, since the city's getting ready for their budget process, this is the contract for the 2013 year. So this would be the amount that would be budgeted in for the contract for 2013.
Questions for Ken or Grace? Anybody have something to say?
The request of the council tonight is approval of the services agreement, which is a vehicle to allow the city to participate with APDC. And you've heard the list of services provided. So the request is for a motion to approve the services agreement.
Do I hear a motion?
I so move.
Ken Kaler first and second. Any further questions or discussion? Okay. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, the same? Okay. Thank you, Grace, for coming.
Thank you.
Keep the good work up.
Thanks, Grace.
Kevin Lindsay, final well number 9 report.
Hey, there it is. Read this, I hope.
Well, you all read it already. What I want to do tonight is part two of what I did 2 weeks ago, basically taking you to where I went with the report as far as recommend what we have for hydrogeologic recommendations for how to potentially drill and construct that well. Just to summarize, if you recall 2 weeks ago, I told you I had a lot of questions. We don't know where we're at with respect to folding, and dikes. Had a couple of these slides, this one showing we could have our contacts higher than predicted. Go to the next one. This one showing we could have our layers, our zones, our location for groundwater occurs being much lower than we might have. And that range of difference is up to 200 feet, and 200 feet in drilling world when you're paying by the foot is a pretty big deal. So we don't have a great handle on where these contacts, where these water bearing zones are going to be. If you recall 2 weeks ago, I was recommending or leaning strongly in the direction of drilling a pilot hole before doing anything else. Subsequent to that, talking to some folks, sitting down and looking at it internally at GSI's office, I've come up with a little bit of a variation, and that's what I put in the memo that you all got about a week or so ago. It's kind of a hybrid approach that tries to minimize some of the cost, still tries to maximize our potential to hit water, and that's what I want to talk about tonight. Basically, with a couple of graphics, show you what I wrote. So let's go to the next one. Oh, just skip that. That's just another picture of the same thing. So, what we've come up with is the basic best case that we're recommending right now. combines a couple of things. In this graphic, this is just a cutout out of that cross-section we were using before. And you can see several sets of lines, these dashed lines here and here, here and here, here and here, here and here. Those dashed lines are those dashed lines I was showing you before. The light blue lines, the there and there, that could be the shallow places. That's a representation of how shallow we might get water bearing units. These lines down here, down here, down here, a representation of where we might hit these water bearing horizons if they are indeed much deeper than we want them to be. So I just have those lines in there to keep you thinking about. It could be as shallow as 700 feet, it could be as deep as 900 or 1,000 feet. With that uncertainty, we came up with, I think, a reasonably straightforward drilling approach to, again, minimize some of the exploratory costs and still kind of maximize the potential for where this thing might go. And basically, what we recommended in the memo is let's drill a fairly large diameter hole, set a 16-inch casing, set and seal a 16-inch casing into the bottom of what we call the Rosa member. There's our 200-foot air. That could be as shallow as 240 feet. It could be as deep as 440 or even 500 feet. The reason we want to set and seal that deep is that the shallow sediments, this TPR, which is shallow basalt, and even the upper Rosa, this TR thing, probably has nitrate impacted groundwater in it, may have other stuff in it, probably is very low yielding in volume, and really isn't water that you probably want to go after. Also, of course, out where the target is, there's not a lot of domestic wells out there, but if there were to be homes built out there at some point, those shallow domestic wells would be targeting the shallow stuff, and you just want to avoid that. So you want to avoid the shallow stuff, low yield, probably somewhat impacted water quality, nitrates, and maybe some other constituents. So they're just as well, it's good to avoid it. Plus, it's rubbly, it may break up, it's difficult to control. So we want to run basically a 20-inch, what we're recommending to you guys, running large diameter boring, approximately 20 inches, down to this depth, 240, 440, somewhere in there, and then set and seal a 16-inch casing into that. To know if we're going to be at 240 or 440, a very important thing to keep in mind, and budgets that I've put together with Larry Julius at G&L, we scoped to do it. We want to pay attention to this first 500 feet very closely because, back up one. We want to pay attention closely because, again, we're either going to have a hole that looks a lot like well number 8, where all these layers are deeper, or a hole that might look a lot like port number 3, where the layers are much shallower. You can see in this graphic that those are pretty different from depth below ground surface. So I want to pay attention early during drilling of this thing to see if, we're looking at a shallower casing set, a high likelihood of a shallower casing set, or a high likelihood of a deeper casing set. The sooner we know that, the smoother this whole thing moves along. So we'll pay a lot of attention to this borehole very early on to see if we're on a track for deep, shallow, or God forbid, something in between, which makes us all crazy and drives us off the deep end. But that's hydrogeology, so I'm used to that. Set and seal that casing down into the bottom of the Rosa. The reason I don't want to go through the Rosa is the bottom of the Rosa in this area has a history of occasionally, more than occasionally, has a history of commonly a good water producer. I don't want to seal that off. I don't want to cement that off. If it's got good water, we want to have access to it. And that would be the first good high production rate water in this hole in this area. So anyways, drilling case down to near the bottom and not to the bottom, seal that all off. Then drill out with a 12-inch open hole. And in this base case, we basically then just take that open hole as deep as it needs to go to meet your production targets. We could drill out in a larger diameter. I don't want to do that yet. I'll talk to you in a minute about why. But with a basic target of 800 gallons a minute, well, more or less is my understanding, A 12-inch open hole will be more than sufficient to provide that and gives you the capability to produce more water relatively easily if it's there. I don't want to go much smaller because it starts cutting down on the efficiency of the well and starts making it tougher. If you hit big water, makes it tougher to get it out of there. So that's the basic, this is the basic construction. It's, we just motor down, get to the bottom, get to the deep end of the Rosa, get this casing set and sealed in, and just drill ahead, opening that thing up until you get the target you want. And also while you're doing this, you can do water quality work, and I'll get to that again in two more slides, because the water quality is of some concern under certain circumstances out here. So the base case is this. The base case is also good because, next slide, it gives us a lot of flexibility if we hit some stuff below the bottom of the production casing in the upper, what we call, hydrogel is called upper Frenchman Springs. We have the potential in this upper part of the Frenchman Springs, somewhere between 400-600 feet down. We could hit rubbly zones, we could hit a clay or silt interbed, we could hit horizons that want to collapse into the borehole. If they want to collapse into the borehole, one good way to control that collapse, so we don't have all this garbage falling in and plugging the hole up, which is bad for a well. Anybody has a well knows that. Don't have stuff fall in the well and shoot production down for these things. It's a bad thing. With this 16-inch casing here, if we hit an unstable zone down in this region, we could drill it through with the 12-inch hole and then back out, ream the hole out to 15 inches if we need to, and then drop a liner in that to stabilize that rubbly interval. Then drill out the bottom of the liner at 9, 10, 12 inches, depending on the size of the liner. I'd probably recommend a 12-inch liner in that if we have to go down that road. And that liner could be slotted as well, so we're not going to cut off our production, but we have rubbly stuff breaking in and filling that hole. Got to stop that. One way to stop it is to cement and seal it off. If, however, it comes with water, you don't want to cement and seal it off if you can help it. So we'd probably recommend running a liner in to stabilize that unstable interval. And then once the liner is set in, again, it could be a slotted liner to let water in, then drill out the bottom at a smaller diameter. Again, minimum diameter would be counting to 5/8, except we have 11 and something if we run a 12-inch. So that 16-inch casing that I want to put in early may be a little bit big, but if we hit any of this, we now have a lot of flexibility to deal with that rubbly stuff. If we put that upper liner in 12 inches, which would be sufficient for an 800-gallon minute well, and we get rubbly material below the bottom of that 12-inch liner, all of a sudden you're below the bottom of that 12-inch sealed casing. All of a sudden, you're looking at a 9-inch liner, and by the time you come out the bottom of that 9-inch liner, you're looking at an 8-inch hole, which is going to have a lot of challenges meeting even the 800-gallon target, depending on how efficient that thing is and how fast it crusts up and corrodes. So I want to use a somewhat oversized upper casing, so we've got the flexibility to deal with anything that happens below us, and then still have a good-sized hole below that. We go into this scenario. And also, that gives us a nice large bore here. So if there's more than 100 gallons a minute there, you've got a really good chance of getting it out with fairly high efficiency, which means during pumping, your drawdown won't be as bad as if it was a very inefficient hole and had a lot of turbulent flow in it. It was a disaster or bad. So I like this configuration because it gives us flexibility for that. The other end member in this then, is, I mentioned we want a sample on the way down. This is back to the base case. You could put that liner in here. You could leave it like this is the base case here as well. Any way you look at it though, back down to the bottom, here's the well 8 scenario. In the top of the Palouse Falls unit, near the bottom of the Frenchman Springs, that's where the fluoride is in number 8, that's where the fluoride is in number 6. And seems to be that's where the fluoride is around here. If we, with this base case scenario, this nice 12-inch hole, or if we had to do the liner, we still have 12-inch down here, it still would be very easy to plug off that bottom interval. Still have a fairly large diameter, hopefully still fairly productive well. So So that would be another example of how this configuration just gives us some flexibility to work with whatever we get without going through the challenges of drilling an 8-inch pilot all the way down and then backing up and redesigning all this, stepping back from that $200,000 pilot hole or whatever that cost was. So with this type of approach, I think it gives you a lot of flexibility to deal with whatever we get without the extra cost of doing a pilot. It gives you several choices for how to build this thing out once we drill down and find out what's there. And most importantly, as we get early into, I shouldn't say most importantly, it's all important. From my point of view, though, what I want to do very early on is track what we're seeing up here so we can as quickly as possible give you guys a prediction. It's going to look a lot like well 8. It's, holy cow, it's going to look like the board number 3 well, which could be a very good producer, well, probably a very good producer. So that's why I want to pay attention to this in the movie. But that's the basic layout. It's trying to maximize the data collection from my perspective without putting a lot of money into a whole pilot that you really don't end up using at the end of the day. So that's what the memos from last week describes. These cartoons kind of show that's what our recommendation is today. Now it's more in for them to you guys. Are there any questions about that approach? Yes, sir.
Okay.
You knew I would, didn't you?
Yeah, I know. Hit me, man. Hit me.
Well, just looking at what we're doing, I think this is kind of the idea of our committee as we talked about this versus an 8-inch pilot hole, which actually would be worthless in the right end. And we're talking about $170,000 more or less to do that. This way you would be drilling a pilot hole in effect inside of this casing already to get what we want to do.
That is a pilot hole, and if everything works out, right, as a bow and boring, you're ready to go.
So
if you have production and don't have a stability problem, don't worry about it.
I think that's the right approach. The only thing is we got to get Gray and Osborne to maybe change their figures a little bit, because all we've got to go by is an 8-inch pilot hole and then later drill the hole and then come back and drill the other one. So we've got to determine what that actual cost is going to be, the difference effect. But I think that that's the right way to go, like what you're saying, is to do this.
I thought a lot about the pilot after meeting 2 weeks ago. Okay, let's do it this way. This will get us down the same road, and maybe solve a few other problems.
Right.
Anything else? I'll get Larry these graphics so he has them. I didn't get edited to whatever style we want. All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you for thinking this out. This is an interesting prospect here. Okay. Now consideration 4.4 of test hole for well number 9. Kevin, I guess you're probably done, right? I think you did both.
We'll let Larry do this.
Oh, Larry, you going to come up?
Good evening, Mayor and Council. I was just looking at, based off of Kevin's numbers, if we were to do the kind of the hybrid, if you will, with having to put a 20-inch hole in down about 440 feet, the 16-inch casing inside of it to the same 440 depth with a cement grout in between the 20-inch hole and the 16-inch casing, which would be required, as Kevin said, to separate us from those upper zones, as well as the requirements of the Department of Ecology and Department of Health. And then all we have to do is a 12-inch hole down below it. If we go down to the 920-foot depth that he was possibly talking about, it looks like, real quick numbers, we'd be substantially less than what we've been discussing as far as cost for a total project cost. And we were looking at anywhere from maybe around $775,000 up to $946,000, depending upon whether we did a 20-inch production hole all the way down to the about 1,000-foot depth, or a 20-inch production with a smaller pilot hole. But we could be anywhere in the maybe $600,000 to $650,000 range without having to do that pilot hole. And this is just a real quick number crunch here. I didn't bring my Snoopy slide rule with me, so it took a little bit longer, but we're looking at quite a bit less numbers than what originally had been anticipated. And what we'd like to do, if it's okay with council and staff, is to get together with Kevin, go through the numbers, and come up with a range similar to what he was talking about, worst case scenario versus best case scenario, and then present that to you with the various costs involved. But it looks like best case scenario, we might be in the low 600,000 figure, which is about 300 less than what was anticipated if we were looking at a pilot hole.
Then give council that he comes back in 2 weeks, you can say?
Definitely, yeah.
Come back to us? Okay.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Quick question there. Is this construction, Larry, or does that include engineering?
That's everything. Total project cost, permits, working with the Adams County Water Conservancy Board, Department of Health costs, ecology costs, advertising for bids, inspection, hydrogeologic costs, everything.
Any questions for council before?
Yeah, I got one here, Larry. Yeah, looking at these two scenarios like we had of the 8-inch hole for pilot and then turn around and do the other, some of those figures, I know they were a little bit less on one side than there were the other, and I don't know whether that was the advantage of having that pilot hole or not. Actually, when you drill it, you're going to lose that pilot hole unless you've got something down in that hole trying to follow that down. Then we was also talking at one time of only putting that pilot hole down 500 feet so we knew what that structure was rather than 1,000 feet. So that 150,000, we could almost cut that half in two.
Absolutely.
Which would be a saving if we were going that direction. But I think that this is the way to go with that and make it happen.
We agree. And we'll get those numbers together, bring it back to you for the next meeting.
Thank you, Larry.
Okay, thank you.
Appreciate that. Kevin, we like you right now. Good job.
I don't like me until I hit something I don't like. I like
you. Oh, don't say that now.
Yeah.
Okay, 4.5, review of 2012 street improvements bid. Larry.
Good evening again. Last Thursday, on the 6th, we received two bids for the 2012 street improvements project. Central Washington Asphalt and Granite Northwest, the two paving contractors up in the basin. The low bid was opened for all of the schedules of work contemplated. Low bid was approximately $859,000. Second bid was approximately $871,000, and estimate was approximately $642,000. We talked to both contractors as far as why there was such a discrepancy. Basically, Granite Northwest indicated they're double booked through the end of the year. They literally have twice as many jobs as they can perform. Central Washington said they're pretty much in the same boat. They have enough work to keep them busy without having to go out for additional bids. We talked with some of the general contractors that we would have expected to see bidding on a job like this to do the utility work and sub out the asphalt work. And they said they were concerned with the amount of work, lateness of the year getting started, and the short time period to complete the work. We've seen this before on projects that get a late start, very limited amount of bidders, a contractor will put a number together, and if they receive the project, it's pure profit. If not, they have other work to get to and get done. After talking with staff, it's our recommendation to reject the bids, wait until early next year, put the bids out again, and give contractors one more time, complete the project, do the overlay work so that it's completed while school's out. That doesn't mean the contractor couldn't start before then, doing some utility work, or even paving the Columbus Park parking lot so that during the summer it can be used while other work is going on. But that's something that we looked at prior to going out for rebids. We might also split the project off. We're doing a little brainstorm with Terry earlier. Do a utility contract and do a paving contract so that paving contractors wouldn't have to worry about hiring a utility contractor and then the city pay for the markup. Or similarly, a utility contractor wouldn't have to have a paving contractor with their markups do the overlay portion. And with that, if there are any questions, we'd be happy to answer them.
Ken, go ahead.
Yeah, I was looking at some of those bids there a little bit, and some of that is way out of line of what it should be. I know Journey and Engineer is pretty close, but when they're three times higher than what your bid is, or what your estimate is, that's ridiculous. They were talking about planing that asphalt, and you had about $3 a square yard.
Yep.
They were anywhere from $2 for a little bitty patch, but then most of it was $8 to $9, which is way out of line. Even their ramps and their sidewalks, they were almost triple of what just a handicap ramp was. So they're doing that. Then another thing is the mobilization of this project. You know, when you put something together, like you've got actually three separate contracts here, and some of those guys are really overboard on that mobilization, and I think that you can work on those guys a little bit and knock a lot of that down and out of there. So I think we're better off if we wait and bid this thing early in the spring or even this winter and have it ready to go for next year.
This is the street project that's in conjunction with a grant that we got
yes,
for Scooty
right.
Street. Is that correct?
Yes, it is.
This isn't going to affect the grant
no.
at all if we reject it and move it to next year.
We talked to Transportation Improvement Board. They said no problem there. In fact, they indicated that they typically would not cover an overage like this and actually recommended that the city wait until next spring.
So
good question.
Not it won't affect how we get paid for that. Okay.
No, those are a two-year program. This is the first year of the program, so next year would be the year we need to get it done.
Catherine, do we need a motion to reject?
Yes. Yeah.
Do you want your motion to reject the bids that were offered to us?
I so move.
Second.
Okay, Ken Kaler first, Dana second. Any other discussion, questions?
I do think this needs to go out this winter, January, February. Because these contractors are going to have 4 or 5 months without doing work.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to be looking for that work for the first off jump off for the spring.
Absolutely.
I am disappointed that we didn't get it done this year.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it should have been done a lot earlier, and we should have been on the ball a little quicker with this. But we need to be right there early this, mm-hmm. so the spring.
I'm disappointed too, because I thought you guys should have got on this a lot quicker. Really, I mean, this is really late. So, you know, so I don't know what the best, is it November's the best time to bid to get the best deals? Whatever it is, I'm with Ken, we want to make sure it's done. And whatever it is, I don't know what's the best time to go, but we want to be ready to roll when it happens.
Agree.
So, you know, this is really late. We don't want to do like Main Street, we had that problem a couple of years ago. So, any other comments by council? Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed the same? That passes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. implementation of comprehensive plan review. Daryl.
Thank you, Mayor, members of the council. Daryl Percy, city planner, for the record. The last piece of the puzzle of the comprehensive plan that we're going to discuss in some detail is the issue of population projections and land capacity analysis associated with those population projections. And I apologize in advance because sometimes this can be a numbers game and it can be a little dry, so I'll try and keep it lively. Probably won't be able to keep it quite as lively as the well discussion earlier, but we'll certainly give it a shot. That was a great presentation. The issue of population projection is actually one that's done by the State of Washington Office of Financial Management. And each year they identify and provide population numbers for every city and county in the state of Washington. It's a little easier at this point in time because they have the 2010 census in which to build upon. So we have an actual count, and then following that actual count, they begin to include estimates of population as time goes on. For the 2010 census, the city of Othello had a population of 7,364 people. Now, OFM has used that number as a base and have recently released figures for April of 2012, which is the time of year each year that they do that, and have shown an increase to 7,495 people. And again, that's an estimate, whereas the 2010 numbers are actual numbers. But what that represents is a historical growth rate of about 1.5% per year. And that's consistent with the growth patterns that we've seen in the city of Othello over the last 10 years or so. So there weren't any real surprises in their estimate for 2012. Now, what OFM actually does is they set up a range using three different sets of figures, and they call it a low, a medium, and a high range, in which they project the population out over the next 20 years. In fact, they go up to 30 years in their projections. But for the purpose of planning under the comprehensive plan, we want to look at about 20 years to see what that population is going to be. And within their ranges, they use a rate of about 0.5% annual growth rate. They use a 1.4% annual growth rate. And their high range is based on a 2.3% growth rate. So considering the fact that we've had a growth rate of about 1.5% over the last 10 years, and that since the census, we've seen an estimated growth rate of about 1.5%. It looked like their mid-range over the course of the next 20 years was really the number that made sense in terms of what our actual population increases very well could be. But remembering that this is an estimate and that it's a projection out into the future, and of course those are always difficult sometimes to make and more difficult to actually be accurate. But they do a pretty good job of setting up those ranges based on historical analysis. Now, the reason why these numbers are so important in the comprehensive planning process is because we want to make sure that we provide for enough land and infrastructure for that future growth so that we can project and plan all of the needs of the city over that next 20 years. But we don't want that estimate to be so large that we're overspending both in terms of road and sewer capacity and water capacity. We want to be able to accommodate the population, but we don't want to miss it by a large factor because it gets to be quite expensive if you do that. And you'll have a lot of capacity that goes unused if, in fact, you do that. So it is important to have a number that's reasonable, but still will anticipate to accommodate the anticipated growth over that 20 years. From a planning perspective and for the comprehensive plan, we use these numbers for a variety of reasons. The first is to determine exactly how much land we're going to need over the course of the next 20 years to accommodate what is anticipated to be that population growth. And if you utilize these numbers using the mid-range, it turns out we are going to need about 350 acres, 346 is what the calculations come to, but about 350 acres of additional residentially zoned land to be able to accommodate the additional population that's expected over the next 20 years. And again, the number that we're anticipating is about 2,775 people. So in order to accommodate those, we will need that many acres to be able to comfortably anticipate and provide for that additional growth. Now, keep in mind that this is a net migration number. This does not take into account the population if the city were to annex properties to the west, as I know there's some discussion about that and some desire to do that perhaps in the future. That additional population is not included in these numbers. And of course, we don't necessarily have to specifically plan for infrastructure for those areas because they're already built out. These are new people and new lands that are needed to accommodate migration of people into the city of Othello. And so that's actually a pretty substantial number when you really stop and think about adding an additional almost 3,000 people to our current population over the next 20 years. But the calculations that's utilized to accommodate that number is again, one that's based on historical perspective. Typically, we have been building out densities of about 4 units per acre. When we look at the Ashwood Notch development that's about ready to begin and the Sagestone developments that have already taken place, they run about that many units per acre. We have a few potential high density developments that will be coming forward in the future. We have some high density zone lands, but balancing out 4 units per acre is about the average number that is considered to be urban development across the state, and certainly is consistent with the level of development that we've seen occur within the city. So we've used the number of 4 units per acre. And we've also used in developing this the number of 2.5 people per household. And that's actually quite a bit higher than the state average. The state average falls about 1.9 now per household is what the calculation is. But because Othello has a history of larger families and larger households, this appeared at 2.5 a reasonable level of household size to be able to help predict and accommodate the number of acres that would be needed for that many people. So taking those two factors into account, that's where we come up with the acreage that's needed to accommodate that growth. Now we also recognize that not every piece of land is going to be available for development, and not every piece of land is going to be for sale. So what is done in the planning process is to create what's called a market factor. And that market factor is intended to represent those lands that are either unbuildable, that may not be available for sale or out on the market, and also to discount those lands that would be utilized for various infrastructure needs, such as roads and perhaps storm ponds and other facilities that would be needed. And so we've included the market factor into the equation, and we've used a number of 25%. So the acreage that we're planning for under this scenario would provide for an additional 25% of land to accommodate that market factor, which would be, again, those lands that aren't for sale or might be unbuildable due to a variety of different reasons. Now, while developing that residential land need, we also will have an additional need for commercial and industrial lands. And what we've done in that sense is take the number of acres that are needed for residential lands, incorporate that into the overall size of the city, and then utilize the same ratio that we currently have of commercial and industrial lands to the population acreage, and have come up with an additional need for commercial and industrial lands. In looking at those, I'm thinking that they might actually be a little low, because as we move forward and your population increases and you become more of a regional center, you probably will be looking at the need for an additional commercial land specifically, but perhaps even some additional industrial lands over what was that came out of the analysis. So we may want to provide a factor of another 25% for those as well, considering that I think your needs for those commercial industrial lands will continue to grow as we move into the future. And it's important that we maintain and make sure we have adequate commercial and industrial lands both to support the population base and to continue to keep economic development going within the city boundaries. So we don't want to be caught short with those two lands being short of supply or hard to get a hold of, or the cost of those rising tremendously because there's so few acres left. So before we finalize those, I think we want to take one more look at those numbers to determine if there is an additional industrial and commercial lands that we want to add, and try to identify the areas where it would be appropriate for those lands to be located. And that's ultimately, this is going to lead to the location of where these additional acres would be located in our land use map, and begin to allow us to prepare and plan for the infrastructure needs that those various uses are going to have throughout the city. So I'm open to any questions that you might have. If you have any concern in regards to this approach or to these numbers, we'd be happy to consider that as we move forward. Again, this is a kind of a kingpin of the comprehensive plan in that it does set the stage for all of the capital facility needs that are going to be present in the city over the next 20 years.
Questions for Darrell? So 2.5 persons per household.
Yes.
Huh. I never guessed it that low.
Well, again, I think I tried to take a very conservative approach.
Yeah.
And keep in mind, this includes all households in the city. So there are some single folks and you know others that balance that out. But if you kept that number too high, then you probably underestimate your acreage needs. And that's a concern if you do that, because you'll find yourself in 15 years not having adequate capacity to accommodate the influx of people that you probably are really going to have. So I think it's important to have a conservative approach to that, those numbers, and a conservative philosophy to the overall growth rate, but not so overblown that it creates substantially more acreage than you're going to need.
I find it interesting. I thought it was interesting reading all of that.
We always
who
use.
Who thinks about that 20 years down the road? You know, really, we have to, but the average citizen doesn't worry about that. So.
And statewide, the average always was 2.2 until about 15 years ago. It trended down to 1.9, and I suspect over the next 15 years we're going to see something in 1.7 or 1.5 statewide, whereas the per household family size is probably going to stay the same or increase in Othello and other Eastern Washington communities.
Any questions? Was this the last piece, or is there some more?
This is the last piece. Now, what you're going to see in the next go-around is all of those components put together in a complete package together with the maps. And then we'll review those, make sure that those have met all of your expectations and your comments up to this point have been included, and we'll review those, and then we'll move that forward towards adoption between now and the end of the year.
Okay. Well, thank you, Darrell.
Thank you.
Okay, 4.7, excess pool concessions, donations to food bank. Molly.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. I am here to discuss the pool concessions. We had a successful year at the pool, and we owe a big thanks to our pool staff who did a great job managing our concessions, made sure not to order too many supplies at the end of the or towards the end of the season. So we were left over with, as you can see, attached to the memo was a list of some of our excess pool concessions. So just a couple bags of chips, some ice cream cones, all of which couldn't be returned to either FSA or Food Services of America or our Pepsi distributor because they were in opened packages. So if a smaller package has been opened, then it can't be returned, and we're unable to get the money back on that. So as for the budget, or as for the total amount, it equals about $90, which I think in the big picture is pretty good, and like I said, a big thanks needs to be given to our pool manager and our concession staff for managing that so well and leaving such a small amount left over. Last year, we had donated the extra concession food to, or we had sold it to the Othello School District, but this year it just equaled such a small amount of money that it wasn't going to be worth it to do so. So we just asked that we could donate the remaining amount of food to the Othello Food Bank.
Questions? Do I hear a motion to donate the remaining 2012 pool concession items to the Othello Food Bank?
So moved. I'll second.
First, Charles second. Any further comments or questions? Okay, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, the same. And that passes. Okay, budget request for transportation multiple events. Molly?
Okay, so I'm here now to talk to you about a couple trips that I have looked into planning and gotten some figures on to kind of kickstart our Parks and Recreation program towards the end of this year. I'm here because when this position was created, we did not allot for a budget line item to be able to plan, or that was dedicated towards planning these type of things. So in order to kind of get the city excited about some of the events that we'll have planned for next year and just anything on the docket for Parks and Rec in general, wanted to start off with three trips between now and the end of the year. And so I have a description of all three of the trips. One of them is the Seattle Seahawks versus New York Jets game. So called over the Seahawks, and they gave us the group rate on the tickets. Spoke with Genie Tours, who actually the city used to work with to be able to transport citizens to events. And they were really excited to work with us again, the possibility of working with us. So put all those numbers together. And so for the Jets game, or the Seahawks-Jets game, we would be asking for roughly $2,800. That will all be paid back once we have participants register. We just need to be able to book the tickets and transportation, and also do the advertising, which is 2 weeks included in the Outlook to do so. So we've factored that in for each event. So the second event would be the Leavenworth Christmas Tree Lighting Festival. It's a couple weekends throughout the end of November and December. So I just picked a day about a month out, so we could be able to market that as its own individual event after the Seahawks game. And so that totals about $1,400. And below that is a trip to the Northern Quest Casino, just a Saturday day trip. Each of these trips will be day trips. And so what that would be is just take a group of citizens to Spokane or Airway Heights and just have them go as a group together to whether it be watch whatever entertainment acts they have that day, or to, I guess, play the slot machines, whatever they decide to do, go to dinner. And as you can see in the description, Northern Quest Casino is nice enough to give if we do book that they'll give a $4 dining credit to any of the participants that come on the bus and take that trip with us. So that was really nice of them. And we got all the best fees that we could and tried to put all that information all together into one. So everything, or what we're asking for today, is roughly $6,000, which kind of pads out a little bit, so and puts all of our fees together. So we're able to book these trips and offer these services to the citizens until the end of the year, where we can then budget for it come budget season. So.
Question? How many seats would you be taking for like the Seahawks game?
24. Right. I wanted to, there were a couple different options with the buses. There was a 24 or 42. I didn't want to go with the 42, although it would save people money. It's, kind of a pilot program at this point, and I didn't want to get too ahead of ourselves with having to fill seats and then not being able to deliver because we couldn't book them, so.
Do I hear a motion to approve the funding in the amount of $6,000 for the scheduling of city trips?
I'll make that motion.
Second.
Snyder first, Gina seconded. Any further questions or no? Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, the same. Okay, then that passes.
Thank you.
Molly? Sounds interesting. When do you think these will start becoming available to sign up?
Well, as soon as we can book the Seahawks trip, which is actually on hold for us right now, then, you kind of just have to get the word out. So I would say within hopefully next week, we can have.
Okay. Good.
That should fill up pretty
easy. Fast.
Hope so.
Well, that's a big ticket game. So, Tebow.
Yeah, Tebow, yeah. Okay. 4.9, proclamation recognizing Patriots Day and National Day of Service in Remembrance. Whereas in the aftermath of terrorist attacks of September 11, 2001, The American people demonstrated that in times of hardship, they are stronger than ever. As a nation, we came together to help our country recover and rebuild from an unthinkable tragedy. And whereas today, we pay tribute to the selfless heroes and innocent victims of September 11, 2001, by reaffirming the spirit of patriotism, service, and unity. And now, therefore, I, Tim Wilson, Mayor of the City of Othello, do hereby encourage all citizens of our community to participate in community service in honor of those that we lost to observe September 11th with appropriate ceremonies and activities, and to observe a moment of silence during our busy days to honor the innocent victims. Signed, this 10th day of September 2012. Just want to encourage everybody to stick a few minutes tomorrow and remember what happened. You know, it was a big time in our nation. And, you know, and pray for those families. They're still, I'm sure, missing their loved ones. So give them a prayer if you can. Okay, thank you. 4.10, monthly investment report. Mike?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and Council. This is kind of it's kind of dry, but I'll try to make it really exciting. I'm going to take a Kevin Lindsay class, but
this is just our monthly report, and I just wanted to make talk about some different things on it. The report itself looks the same as it does every month. I always move it a month, so we're always looking at a year. It looks like at the end of the last one in the LGIP for July, like we had this huge interest increase up to 0.4824,
showed us basically had the investment split $4 million something on one and $4 million something on the other.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Now the Bank of America is outperforming quite a bit. Is there a reason we do that?
Is there a reason why we don't put more into the Bank of America?
Yeah, shift the money from the state to the pool that doesn't seem like it's doing much. I'm sure there's a reason, so that's
right.
Why.
It has to do with liquidity. In Bank of America, if I want to draw any money out, there could be a cost to it. And it could be, I might lose money on it. It just depends on what the market is at the current time. In the state pool is just like cash. I can call them before 10 o'clock in the morning and I have the money in the bank that day, that same day. So it's very, very liquid. And so when we're doing projects, it's just like the well. I assume that with this well, we're going to spend $1 million and then we're going to start putting in a water line that's going to cost us at least that much or more. And so it's nice to have a place where I can go and get money and earn a very liquid and transfer it into our account very easily. So that's really it. If it has been building, I will say this, since I've been here. And so if we continue to build up reserves, and the LGIP was to grow, and we consider very strongly transferring more money into Bank of America. But I think that's a very excellent question.
Any other questions?
Okay. So did I get everybody's blood rushing?
You can't get money.
it's nice to see that amount in there, but we've got to remember quite a bit of it's pretty much already planned for down the future with the sewer project, the water project, and it's great work by this council what we did to get to that amount in order to pay cash for those jobs when we need to do it.
We internally funded over $2 million on that Main Street project, and then we still have $9 million in investment, so that's pretty impressive.
Okay, thank you, Mike. Committee reports. Do we have any committee reports? Nothing tonight? Okay. Unfinished business? New business? Okay, then the council will now adjourn into executive session pursuant of RCW 42.30.110, parentheses 1, parentheses B, consider the selection of a site or the acquisition of real estate by lease or purchase. The executive session will last 20 minutes. No action will be taken during the executive session. We'll also, after that one, go into another executive session that's not on the agenda. Potential litigation, performance of public employee. So you know that, so that one will probably go half an hour, I suppose. Something like that, probably. So, thank everybody for coming. You're welcome to come back afterwards. There should be no decisions done.